Once again, in this phase of the dream, the patient is acknowledging his failure to experience to the full an important aspect of childhood and early adolescence. He missed out on the playfulness of the child, and also on the rather more advanced pranks of the young teenager, and he is seeking ways in which those lost experiences and personal qualities can be rehabilitated. Next comes a curious change in the dream. The young man in black appears, and for a moment the dreamer feels that this is the true hero. That is all we are told about the man in black. Yet this fleeting glimpse introduces a theme of profound importance, a theme that occurs frequently in dreams. This is the concept of the shadow, which plays such a vital role in analytical psychology. Dr. Jung has pointed out that the shadow cast by the conscious mind of the individual contains the hidden, repressed, and unfavorable or nefarious aspects of the personality. But this darkness is not just the simple converse of the conscious ego. Just as the ego contains unfavorable and destructive attitudes, so the shadow has good qualities, normal instincts and creative impulses. Ego and shadow, indeed, although separate, are inextricably linked together in much the same way that thought and feeling are related to each other. The ego, nevertheless, is in conflict with the shadow, in what Dr. Jung once called the battle for deliverance. In the struggle of primitive man to achieve consciousness, this conflict is expressed by the contest between the archetypal hero and the cosmic powers of evil, personified by dragons and other monsters. In the developing consciousness of the individual, the hero figure is the symbolic means by which the emerging ego overcomes the inertia of the unconscious mind and liberates the mature man from a regressive longing to return to the blissful state of infancy in a world dominated by his mother. Usually, in mythology, the hero wins his battle against the monster. I shall say more about this in a moment. But there are other hero myths in which the hero gives in to the monster. A familiar type is that of Jonah and the whale, in which the hero is swallowed by a sea monster that carries him on a night sea journey from west to east, thus symbolizing the supposed transit of the sun from sunset to dawn. The hero goes into darkness, which represents a kind of death. I have encountered this theme in dreams presented in my own clinical experience. The battle between the hero and the dragon is the more active form of this myth, and it shows more clearly the archetypal theme of the ego's triumph over regressive trends. For most people, the dark or negative side of the personality remains unconscious. The hero, on the contrary, must realize that the shadow exists and that he can draw strength from it. He must come to terms with its destructive powers if he is to become sufficiently terrible to overcome the dragon. That is, before the ego can triumph, it must master and assimilate the shadow. One can see this theme, incidentally, in a well-known literary hero figure, Goethe's character of Faust. In accepting the wager of Mephistopheles, Faust put himself in the power of a shadow figure that Goethe describes as part of that power which, willing evil, finds the good. Like the man whose dream I have been discussing, Faust had failed to live out to the full an important part of his early life. He was, accordingly, an unreal or incomplete person who lost himself in a fruitless quest for metaphysical goals that failed to materialize. He was still unwilling to accept life's challenge to live both the good and the bad. It is to this aspect of the unconscious that the young man in black in my patient's dream seems to refer. Such a reminder of the shadow side of his personality, of its powerful potential, and its role in preparing the hero for the struggles of life, is an essential transition from the earlier parts of the dream to the theme of the sacrificial hero, the handsome young man who places himself on an altar. This figure represents the form of heroism that is commonly associated to the ego-building process of late adolescence. A man expresses the ideal principles of his life at this time, sensing their power both to transform himself and to change his relations with others. He is, so to speak, in the bloom of youth, attractive, full of energy and idealism. Why, then, does he willingly offer himself as a human sacrifice? The reason, presumably, is the same as that which made the twins of the Winnebago myth give up their power on pain of destruction. The idealism of youth, which drives one so hard, is bound to lead to overconfidence. The human ego can be exalted to experience godlike attributes, but only at the cost of overreaching itself and falling to disaster. This is the meaning of the story of Icarus. The youth who is carried up to heaven on his fragile, humanly contrived wings, but who flies too close to the sun and plunges to his doom. All the same, the youthful ego must always run this risk, for if a young man does not strive for a higher goal than he can safely reach, he cannot surmount the obstacles between adolescence and maturity. So far, I have been talking about the conclusions that at the level of his personal associations, my patient could draw from his own dream. Yet there is an archetypal level of the dream, the mystery of the proffered human sacrifice. It is precisely because it is a mystery that it is expressed in a ritual act that in its symbolism carries us a long way back into man's history. Here, as the man lies stretched out on an altar, we see a reference to an act even more primitive than those performed on the altar stone in the temple at Stonehenge. There, as on so many primitive altars, we can imagine a yearly solstice rite combined with the death and rebirth of a mythological hero. The ritual has a sorrow about it that is also a kind of joy, an inward acknowledgement that death also leads to a new life. Whether it is expressed in the prose epic of the Winnebago Indians, in a lament for the death of Balder in the Norse Eddas, in Walt Whitman's poems of mourning for Abraham Lincoln, or in the dream ritual whereby a man returns to his youthful hopes and fears, it is the same theme, the drama of new birth through death. The end of the dream brings out a curious epilogue in which the dreamer at last becomes involved in the action of the dream. He and others are on a platform from which they have to descend. He does not trust the ladder because of the possible interference of hoodlums, but a woman encourages him to believe he can go down safely, and this is accomplished. Since I found out from his associations that the whole performance he witnessed was part of his analysis, a process of inner change that he was experiencing, he was presumably thinking of the difficulty of getting back to everyday reality again. His fear of the toughs, as he calls them, suggests his fear that the trickster archetype may appear in a collective form. The saving elements in the dream are the man-made ladder, which here is probably a symbol of the rational mind, and the presence of the woman who encourages the dreamer to use it. Her appearance in the final sequence of the dream points to a psychic need to include a feminine principle as a complement to all this excessively masculine activity. It should not be assumed from what I have said, or from the fact that I have chosen to use the Winnebago myth to illuminate this particular dream, that one must seek for complete and wholly mechanical parallels between a dream and the materials one can find in the history of mythology. Each dream is individual to the dreamer, and the precise form it takes is determined by his own situation. What I have sought to show is the manner in which the unconscious draws on this archetypal material and modifies its patterns to the dreamer's needs. Thus, in this particular dream, one must not look for a direct reference to what the Winnebago describe in the Red Horn or Twin Cycles. The reference is rather to the essence of those two themes, to the sacrificial element in them. As a general rule, it can be said that the need for hero symbols arises when the ego needs strengthening, when, that is to say, the conscious mind needs assistance in some task that it cannot accomplish unaided or without drawing on the sources of strength that lie in the unconscious mind. In the dream I have been discussing, for instance, there was no reference to one of the more important aspects of the myth of the typical hero, his capacity to save or protect beautiful women from terrible danger. The damsel in distress was a favorite myth of medieval Europe. This is one way in which myths or dreams refer to the anima, the feminine element of the male psyche that Goethe called the eternal feminine. The nature and function of this female element will be discussed later in this book by Dr. von Franz, but its relation to the hero figure can be illustrated here by a dream produced by another patient, also a man of mature years. He began by saying, "I had returned from a long hike through India. A woman had equipped myself and a friend for the journey, and on my return I reproached her for failing to give us black rain hats, telling her that through this oversight we had been soaked by the rain." This introduction to the dream, it later emerged, referred to a period in this man's youth when he was given to taking heroic walks through dangerous mountain country in company with a college friend. As he had never been to India, and in view of his own associations to this dream, I concluded that the dream journey signified his exploration of a new region, not, that is to say, a real place, but the realm of the unconscious. In his dream, the patient seems to feel that a woman, presumably a personification of his anima, has failed to prepare him properly for this expedition. The lack of a suitable rain hat suggests that he feels in an unprotected state of mind in which he is uncomfortably affected by exposure to new and not altogether pleasant experiences. He believes that the woman should have provided a rain hat for him, just as his mother provided clothes for him to wear as a boy. This episode is reminiscent of his early picaresque wanderings when he was sustained by the assumption that his mother, the original feminine image, would protect him against all dangers. As he grew older, he saw that this was a childish illusion, and he now blames his misfortune on his own anima, not his mother. In the next stage of the dream, the patient speaks of participating in a hike with a group of people. He grows tired and returns to an outdoor restaurant, where he finds his raincoat, together with the rain hat that he had missed earlier. He sits down to rest, and as he does so, he notices a poster stating that a local high school boy is taking the part of Perseus in a play. Then the boy in question appears, who turns out to be not a boy at all, but a husky young man. He is dressed in gray with a black hat, and he sits down to talk with another young man dressed in a black suit. Immediately after this scene, the dreamer feels a new vigor and finds that he is capable of rejoining his party. They all then climb over the next hill. There, below them, he sees their destination. It is a lovely harbor town. He feels both heartened and rejuvenated by the discovery. Here, in contrast to the restless, uncomfortable, and lonely journey of the first episode, the dreamer is with a group. The contrast marks a change from an earlier pattern of isolation and youthful protest to the socializing influence of a relation to others. Since this implies a new capacity for relatedness, it suggests that his anima must now be functioning better than it was before, symbolized by his discovery of the missing hat that the anima figure had previously failed to provide for him. But the dreamer is tired, and the scene at the restaurant reflects his need to look at his earlier attitudes in a new light with the hope of renewing his strength by this regression. And so it turns out. What he first sees is a poster suggesting the enactment of a youthful hero role, a high school boy playing the part of Perseus. Then he sees the boy, now a man, with a friend who makes a sharp contrast to him. The one dressed in light gray, the other in black, can be recognized, from what I have previously said, as a version of the twins. They are hero figures expressing the opposites of ego and alter ego, which, however, appear here in a harmonious and unified relation. The patient's associations confirmed this and emphasized that the figure in gray represents a well-adapted worldly attitude to life, whereas the figure in black represents the spiritual life, in the sense that a clergyman wears black. That they wore hats, and he now had found his own, points to their having achieved a relatively mature identity of a kind that he had felt to be severely lacking in his own earlier adolescent years, when the quality of tricksterism still clung to him, in spite of his idealistic self-image as a seeker of wisdom. His association to the Greek hero Perseus was a curious one, which proved especially significant because it revealed a glaring inaccuracy. It turned out that he thought Perseus was the hero who slew the Minotaur and rescued Ariadne from the Cretan labyrinth. As he wrote the name down for me, he discovered his mistake, that it was Theseus, not Perseus, who slew the Minotaur. And this mistake became suddenly meaningful, as such slips often do, by making him notice what these two heroes had in common. They both had to overcome their fear of unconscious demonic maternal powers and had to liberate from these powers a single youthful feminine figure. Perseus had to cut off the head of the Gorgon Medusa, whose horrifying visage and snaky locks turned all who gazed upon them to stone. He later had to overcome the dragon that guarded Andromeda. Theseus represented the young patriarchal spirit of Athens, who had to brave the terrors of the Cretan labyrinth with its monstrous inmate, the Minotaur, which perhaps symbolized the unhealthy decadence of matriarchal Crete. In all cultures, the labyrinth has the meaning of an entangling and confusing representation of the world of matriarchal consciousness. it can be traversed only by those who are ready for a special initiation into the mysterious world of the collective unconscious. Having overcome this danger, Theseus rescued Ariadne, a maiden in distress. This rescue symbolizes the liberation of the anima figure from the devouring aspect of the mother image. Not until this is accomplished can a man achieve his first true capacity for relatedness to women. The fact that this man had failed adequately to separate the anima from the mother was emphasized in another dream, in which he encountered a dragon, a symbolic image for the devouring aspect of his attachment to his mother. This dragon pursued him, and because he had no weapon, he began to get the worst of the struggle. Significantly, however, his wife appeared in the dream, and her appearance somehow made the dragon smaller and less threatening. This change in the dream showed that in his marriage, the dreamer was belatedly overcoming the attachment to his mother. In other words, he had to find a means of freeing the psychic energy attached to the mother-son relationship in order to achieve a more adult relation to women, and indeed to adult society as a whole. The hero-dragon battle was the symbolic expression of this process of growing up. But the hero's task has an aim that goes beyond biological and marital adjustment. It is to liberate the anima as that inner component of the psyche that is necessary for any true creative achievement. In this man's case, we have to guess the probability of this outcome because it is not directly stated in the dream of the Indian journey. But I am sure he would confirm my hypothesis that his journey over the hill and the site of his goal as a peaceful harbor town contained the rich promise that he would discover his authentic anima function. He would thus be cured of his early resentment at not being given protection, the rain hat, by the woman for his journey through India. In dreams, significantly placed towns can often be anima symbols. The man had won this promise of security for himself by his contact with the authentic hero archetype and had found a new cooperative and related attitude to the group. His sense of rejuvenation naturally followed. He had drawn on the inner source of strength that the hero archetype represents. He had clarified and developed that part of him which was symbolized by the woman, and he had, by his ego's heroic act, liberated himself from his mother. These and many other examples of the hero myth in modern dreams show that the ego as hero is always essentially a bearer of culture rather than a purely egocentric exhibitionist. Even Trickster, in his misguided or unpurposive way, is a contributor to the cosmos as primitive man sees it. In Navajo mythology, as Coyote, he hurled the stars into the sky as an act of creation. He invented the necessary contingency of death, and in the myth of emergence, he helped lead the people through the hollow reef.